The primary election is almost here. Vote centers will be open May 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make your vote count. Visit vote.indy.gov for more information. This message was paid for by the Marion County Election Board.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee. Brought to you by Luxair Premium Residential Systems, a smart choice in home comfort. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
What a headline it's going to make! Marco Andretti wins in his debut in Indianapolis. He has a seven-car length advantage midway down the backstretch for the final time.
Coming up on the scene in which he may have won the race. Last time by, they're waving bandanas, waving heads. To the left tank for racing immortality for 19-year-old Marco Andretti.
And Sam Hornish Jr. right on the tail of Marco Andretti. Can a teenager win?
White flag will fly on the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, and it's on number one.
If Alex Palou is going to get Elio Castroneves, it's not in turn one. Elio leads into the short chute.
Five cars ahead of our leader, a new team, and a new life for Elio Castroneves. Ryan Hunter Ray is in front of Elio Castroneves. Two-car length advantage down the back straightaway for the final time.
All kinds of traffic now as they work their way into turn number four. But it's Elio Castroneves behind Ryan Hunter Ray, trying to hold up Alex Palou. Castroneves looking for number four, Chris.
A two-car length advantage. Elio Castroneves trying to become a four-time winner out of turn four.
Off turn four for the final time. Elio Castroneves comes to the start-finish line. Twin checkers out, and then there were four. Elio Castroneves joins the four-time winners club. He wins the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Just a couple of more days, and it once again will be race week in Indianapolis. Hello, thanks for joining us again tonight. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Eddie Garrison is in the studios downtown on Monument Circle. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, as we continue to get geared up for the Indianapolis 500 at the end of the month. The GMR Grand Prix is coming up in fact, a week from today. We'll have activity going with Indy Next by Firestone, and the USF Pro Championships will be on track next Thursday. And then IndyCar joins on Friday and the race on Saturday afternoon. So that is Saturday afternoon, the 13th. What else going on, Kurt? We sure remind people that 100 Days to Indy, Episode 2, premieres tonight at 9 o'clock. If you have the CW, I will be looking for the app and downloading that off of Roku. I know that's one outlet I can do it, or just simply go to the old-fashioned internet, and I think it's available to watch otherwise starting tomorrow morning, so I'll watch it tomorrow morning.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'll catch it probably lunchtime tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. I think we'll see more of Colton Herta, more of Pato O'Ward. At least that's what the trailer suggests. And we'll see where the storylines go.
Yeah, I don't know what's in this one. I got a screener emailed to me even before we watched the premiere in L.A. And I didn't watch that. I just, because I knew I was going to the premiere. And I have not been sent one. I don't think I'm in this one because I didn't work the Texas race. So I wasn't there unless they used something archived that we did before the season. I sat down with him again yesterday morning. We talked a lot about hugs and lack thereof between Pato O'Ward and Scott Dixon, and things starting to get into the month of May. So I'm encouraged and curious to see where things go on that front. A lot of events kind of, you know, the month of May is here. And I'm sad that I'm not running the mini marathon this year. I was going to do like I normally do. Oh, do like a long run at Long Beach and say, it's good enough. We'll give it a go. But I pulled a calf muscle the week before Long Beach and haven't been able to run since. It's fine to walk, but it's probably not a good idea to run. So I'm finally going to make the smart decision and take the time off. So this will be the first time that I think I've been available and haven't run it for a while when they've had it. But with that, since I won't be wiped out, I'm going to go to Rev for the first time. I've never been to Rev. So we happened to get an invite from somebody just a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to go, and I'll tell you more about the group that I'm joining next week after I get a chance to spend some time with them.
Well, my last mini marathon was 1982, and I intend to keep that streak alive. I was a senior to be, and in great shape, and you know, not far from getting to run college cross country. But that wasn't going to be after that was over. No thanks. No more mini marathons for me.
Okay, you know, so I don't forget. I'm just going to go ahead and do this now because. One of the things our partners with Circle City Raceway have presented us with news of the day, highlighting their racing program, including their new clay racing surface Friday night at the dirt track. That's their debut. 410 steel block sprints, UMP modified, Ford Crown Vic, Super Stocks, and Pure Stocks. Tickets just $15 for 13 to 64. 12 and under are free. Also, $12 for military, first responders, veterans, seniors, and teachers. Circle City Raceway at the Marion County Fairgrounds, CircleCityRaceway.com. Got a couple of little nuggets here, and I'm going to do a twist for our news of the day. Ed Sheeran and his court case. I'm going to make our news of the day today as I scan Twitter from this afternoon. It says, from CNN Breaking News, a Manhattan jury has found that Ed Sheeran's hit Thinking Out Loud did not infringe on the copyright of the classic Marvin Gaye song, Let's Get It On. I'm familiar with this because I watch the Today Show in the mornings after I watch SportsCenter while I'm just doing my bit. So I've heard of this case. And here's how it applies to our world. Ed Sheeran apparently had said, you know what, if I lose this case, I'm done. I've got enough money. I'm probably done. And he is one of the highlight acts for the Hy-Vee weekend at Iowa. So this is good news. This means no one has to go scrambling looking to replace Ed Sheeran and finding out if they can't get the money back they already paid him, if that is indeed how that works. So I think Ed is still going to be appearing in the Des Moines area coming up this summer.
So I think that means the Iowa Speedway people can say, let's get it on. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. But do not play it back to back with I don't know. Don't play it back to back with Thinking Out Loud, though.
Oh,
I see. You can say Let's Get It On, but let's not do any kind of mashup there, and let's just stay away from that. All right. We'll get to F1 Twitter in a little bit. I think I've had enough of. I enjoy F1, and I love the atmosphere, and it's great background. But I'm already annoyed, and it's Thursday. Enough already. I may have to just sign off Twitter for the rest of the weekend. We've seen enough of that. And boy, is that going to be an exciting race. That's the thing. The Thursday, Friday, Saturday, if you're interested in F1, is all you have to look forward to, is it not?
Yeah.
Because the worst part of the event is the race. It's over. It's over already.
Well, yeah. I mean, when the Red Bull guys win all the races, that seems this year. And honestly, this is not a great – you're talking about – you know, racetracks that could use some passing zones. Yeah, it's not the place. It'll be interesting to see what Las Vegas looks like. Anyway, this is not one high on my bucket list.
But as I said, it's not a great racetrack, but it's difficult to make a great racetrack with the environment they are allowed. It does, like I talked about with other street events, it serves the purpose. There's going to be a lot of money made, and that's their purpose. So well done. And it's exposing motorsports to some people that otherwise would not be exposed to motorsports in that environment. And good on you. All right. Last night, we started off with tweets, and I want to do the same thing. I want to encourage more of that because we've been getting a lot of good questions, and we have every night so we can kind of get into more of a flow. And then as news breaks, and certainly as we get closer to races, we'll start off with, you know, more highlights of news of the day and things on our mind as well. But let's just begin there. The plural of moose is moose. E. Hirschberger has another good question on IndyCar's youth movement. Over under for championships in the next 10 years. Pato Award, Romain Grosjean, and Scott McLaughlin, he all has it 2.5. Kyle Kirkwood, he has it 3.5. Colton Herta, he has at 1.5, the field 4.5, drivers currently, I'm sorry, at four. Well, I think what he means, it's 2 to 5. I don't know anything about gambling. he writes 2.5. Does he mean 2.5? Or is that, no, it'd be a slash if it was 2 to 5 or 5 to 2. And so at 2.5, the field 4.5. Drivers currently in the system, 2.5. Yeah, over under. I understand that. Well, I'm going to take the under on all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a competitive sport. The one that really struck me was Kirkwood. I don't see over 3.5 by any stretch of the imagination. The Andretti cars haven't proven to be, you know, championship metal in a decade here. It's been Ganassi or Penske, largely. You know, the one that I think you could take the over on and feel reasonably good about is McLaughlin. I think that could be one. But everybody else, you're right, it's an under. You just take the under. And you can't take the field either because, you know, it's just too competitive.
The field 4.5, yeah, because that group there, Pato is probably going to win a championship. I think McLaughlin has a great chance to win a championship. Colton is different. You know, he's already four races in. He's not going to win the championship this year. I feel pretty confident in that. And does he have one more year in his prime? Because the goal is still for him to be in Formula One in 2025 for him and for the team. So, you know, you're going to cut out two, and then he'll be back. Unfortunately, that's just kind of the way it goes for most Formula One drivers. But great for him. I'd take the same opportunity, give Formula One a try, and maybe it goes really well. And you spend 6 or 7 or 8 years there, you know, because they're done with you by the time you're in your early 30s. And then he can come back and run IndyCar, you know, until he's over 40, if he really wants to do so. No, this is, I'd be shocked if anybody goes over. You know, winning three championships, not many people do that. And when you talk Kirkwood to win four, so we've had what? Now, the Champ Car thing is different. Bourdais won four. I put an asterisk, no offense. There's just an asterisk by that. But what the list is, Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti, probably, since A.J. Foyt?
Yeah, Mario.
And Mario, yes. So since the mid-'80s.
Mid-'80s. Let's think about it this way.
So almost 40 years.
You ask about a decade. Joseph Newgarden's only won two in a decade. You know, really power his two just come within the stretch of a decade, 9 years separation, I believe. So it's very difficult. And those two are driving for Team Penske. So yeah, just all of those unders would be good.
I guess trying to answer the question though, who has the best chance? It's Pato. I'd take
McLaughlin, but fair point.
He's older.
He is.
And he's always going to have to beat in the same car to at least two other championship contenders. Now, you can make that same case for Pato with Arrow McLaren and, you know, at least one or two in an Andretti car. Yeah, good question. Good question, though. Good thinking point. It gets really tough if I think you drop them all by one. Then it's, you know, if you say Pato 1.5, Grosjean would still be too high at 1.5, I think. You know, he's 37 years old. So one is going to be awesome, and he's going to be pretty happy with that. If you said 2.5 for Kirkwood at his age, if you said just getting to one, you know, more than a half for Herta, same kind of thing. But fun question there. Mike Stoops, at Stoops _ Mike. I know you can't share or maybe even know what the numbers are for Peacock, but can you comment on how it's going for NBC? I assume their police and streaming practices, qualifying, and even special sessions has continued year to year. So your first point is correct. No, I wouldn't be able to share. And two, no, I don't even know. I know more now than I did a few weeks ago because they are starting to share a little bit of that, but I'll tell you this. So no, we don't hear what the Peacock numbers are. What we do hear is what people that follow the industry hear, and NBC PR has been releasing this, digital viewership. So, for example, from the Barber race, if I recall, the number was somewhere around 930,000, 940 or whatever. It was pretty much even from the year before for watching on television. And then I saw a final number, which combines, and I believe I saw something like 972,000. And I could be off a few thousand on these numbers. So that tells us, okay, there was about 40,000 that watched digitally. I don't believe that's necessarily Peacock. I think, and it could be wrong, but I think you can still watch on NBCSports.com for anything that is on NBC. If you have the ability to get NBC, you can watch NBCSports.com. So I think that's a combination of Peacock and NBCSports.com. And maybe IndyCar Brass, maybe Mark Miles. I would think he probably knows. But I think all entities pretty much like to keep these numbers close to the vest right now until they get really big and they share them. Or somehow they, when Nielsen starts rating these numbers, which I think is being discussed a little bit, and then they will have to be shared.
Fair. Yeah. You know, we get total numbers, but breaking them down is not something I've seen either. So I can say,
second point though, I do think they're happy.
I was going to say that. I think they're happy. It's you know, they have continued down this path of providing content from all the practice sessions and, you know, obviously the qualifying sessions. And so, you know, having that material and delivering a product to the fan base is all good. And I think it's been terrific. You know, and I think those that want to find it can find it. And people have gotten more used to the Peacock and the streaming option. So it's on the right trajectory. I think that's fair to say.
I do hear some commentary from people, you know, that are not employees of Comcast and just people that pay attention to this side of things saying, we think NBC has done it the right way. You're going to lose some money in the beginning of these kind of ventures, but you don't want to be behind because we don't know when that day is coming. But at some point in the transition, and there will be both, which is what we're in now. But if you're behind, it might be difficult to catch up. So you may just, this is an investment. You may have to lose some money on some things. And NBC is investing by putting some live properties and some unique content and exclusive content on streaming. And ESPN has done the same thing with ESPN Plus, and others are doing that as well. So I think, from what I understand, people in the industry think that they are well positioned for this moving forward. And the other thing is, it's really nice to have. I think it's more important when your shows are on network than cable, because what we've seen, if you're on network, you are at the mercy of your affiliate. And if they've got a telethon going on, if your race is at noon Eastern and 11 a.m. Central on Sunday, that might be infomercial time in your market, and they may not carry the pre-race or the start of the race. Or when a tornado warning hits, you're off the air on network TV and there's nothing we can do about it. Cable, you don't have those interruptions. So it's good if you're a hardcore fan like we are to have a backup where you can always know you can go to Peacock and find the race. And when your DVR forgets to record it, or you forget to record it, or the power goes out, you can get it on demand on Peacock. So there's that.
Okay.
Lawrence Cunningham asks, if it were to happen, which team would have the best chance to sweep the front row for the 500? Ganassi came close last year for the top six. Carpenter, Andretti, Penske, McLaren. Another great question.
So I'll go on a limb and take it a little bit further. I might be surprised if Ganassi doesn't sweep the front row in qualifying this year. Think about it this way. You know, Ericsson has continued to get better. He's gone 13th, 11th, 9th, and last year 5th. He's been getting better in qualifying. Dixon has gone 2nd, 1st, and 1st the last 3 years, won poles for the last 8 years. And, you know, he started in the top four with three different manufacturers. I mean, he's been incredible. So Dixon should be there. Pillow was on the front row last year. They were both 1-2. So I think the combination, and Sato's been a front row qualifier. So I think with those four guys, it wouldn't surprise me if they swept the front row this year. Now, will they? The odds are pretty unlikely. I mean, the odds aren't in their favor, But if someone's going to do it, it'll be Ganassi.
Can't argue that. That's definitely the best chance. Second best chance is going to be McLaren. And let's just look at it from numbers. I think they might have the second best cars as well. But they, like Ganassi, have four that we think are going to be pretty good. So they got four chances to get the three spots. Penske has to go 3 for 3. Carpenter has to go 3 for 3. Andretti would have numbers. They would have 5, but Devlin DeFrancesco is not a candidate for the front row at this point. And I have no idea whether Marco Andretti is or not. It depends on whether he gets the slow car syndrome. He won the pole in 2020. He was not quick last year. But I would think they're the next candidate. He kind of went, them or Carpenter. I would say Andretti potentially has 4 chances as well. You put Marco with the other 3, but they're unknowns there. There's just a lot of inexperience at the Indianapolis 500 with Kirkwood and Grosjean. And even Colton is, yes, he's a kid, and this will be, what is, 5th or 6th 500, but it's still somewhat relative there. So, yes, you're right. Your answer is Ganassi.
Yeah, I think that is the other one I counted up. 7 front row starts now for Scott Dixon. 7. So if you're telling me that the Andretti's are going to be good or the Arrow McLaren's are going to be good, they're all going to have to beat Dixon in order to sweep the front row. And I don't think they all can.
Joseph Hall, J Hall 1455. Any chance on bringing the balloon spectacle back to its proper race day tradition? Short answer would be no. It's not happening right now. It will happen if someone figures out how to do an environmentally friendly balloon, something that the protesters will decide it's not worth their time to protest. But it's just, in my opinion, not worth it to go through angering a group and bringing that type of attention to your event.
Yeah, you don't need that distraction. You're there to race. And there are other, I suppose, situations or issues or topics that are out there that you just don't need the distraction leading up to the Indy 500.
I'm sure they're looking into what might work in the future.
I think they'll get
smarter.
There.
Yeah, but this year, no, I don't. Unless someone's been keeping an awfully good secret, it's not happening anytime soon. But hopefully again someday, because, I miss it too. And I'm not smart enough to know what the environmental impact is. So, there are probably bigger issues involved, and I'm still going to love the events. All right. I forgot to mention this at the top. It was worth mentioning. We've got a guest on the program tonight. I'll be back in a few minutes to see what we missed and catch up on some late tweets as well. But Kurt is going to go one-on-one with IndyCar rookie Stingray Robb coming up in just a moment. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Trackside, brought to you by Luxair Premium Residential Systems, a smart choice in home comfort, on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Welcome back to Trackside on a Thursday as we get ready for a lot of happenings at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, GMR Grand Prix next week, and the Indy 500 to follow. Somebody who's going to get a lot of that, a lot of Indianapolis. He's been spending a lot of time in Indianapolis, but going to get a lot more of the speedway is Stingray Robb, who I got to think after 4 races in the NTT IndyCar Series, you have to be thinking, am I really an IndyCar Series driver? You took such a nice progression through the road to Indy, and now it's finally here and it's real. So how's it feel?
Good. We're rolling off of a bad weekend at Barber, having that mechanical failure pretty early on in the race. But that was the first weekend that I actually felt like an IndyCar driver. I think part of that was just like everything's kind of settling in. I'm going to tracks that I know now. I'm not going to new events for me. And, Barber was a track that we tested at earlier this year. So I don't know. I'm still getting the pinch me moments every once in a while, but they're fewer and far between. But it's still really cool. I get to look back at the race and say, oh, I was racing against Felix Rosenquist or Scott Dixon or, whoever else it was. And it's like, wow, I'm a fan of those guys still right now, even though I'm competing against them. But it's a cool feeling because it means that I'm doing what I love.
You got a lot of TV time over the weekend because of that Barber incident. That has to be the strange feeling. You've been, motoring along, attacking the racetrack, and then you're just sitting there and people are going by. I know you were in a safe spot, But you just kind of are sitting out there. In fact, you know, if you remember a couple years ago, James Hinchcliffe had one of those. Was that a Barber? It was at Barber. And he literally sat there the whole race. So you have to sit there that long. What's that feeling like?
It's kind of like, I remember playing sports growing up, and when coach would bench you for making a mistake, and you get to watch all the other kids go out and play. That's what it felt like. You're just sitting on the bench, watching everyone have fun. You're stuck in the middle of the racetrack, watching cars go by. But I had a great conversation with AMR safety crew in the middle of the race there. So, yeah, it's still sad to watch other people go have the fun.
So you had to, you didn't get to go, you couldn't get back to the pits? Is that what happened? I mean, I know you sat in the car for a little bit, so you sat, like, in a safe zone with the AMR guys?
Yeah, yeah. So they actually just pulled my car up into the short chute between turn 5 and the back straightaway. And so I just sat in that AMR safety truck for, you know, whatever that was, the remaining 55 laps or so. We were betting lemon drops to see when McLaughlin was going to get around Grosjean. And I guessed right. I said 3 more laps, and it was 3 more laps exactly. So I was like, that's the highlight of the day. I was guessing on who was going to pass who there. But it was unfortunate that I had to sit there for that long. I'd rather be out on the track in my own car rather than in someone else's safety vehicle.
Yeah, and you had the TV time as well at St. Pete being collected in that crash. You're actually earning it the wrong way. I don't know any other way to put it, but that's kind of the way that's happened.
I agree. I'd rather be up front earning it with results than I am the way I am right now.
So Stingray Rob joins us, driver of the number 51 Biohaven Honda. By the way, this is a long introduction. The Dale Coyne Racing with Rick Ware Racing. It almost tongue-ties me a lot, so I assume you've had to practice some. Let's talk about Indianapolis. You've been living here in town. You certainly see or have seen over the last couple of years the momentum build for the month of May. Have you allowed yourself to kind of think about that part of it yet, or is it still just it's not real yet because we're not at the racetrack?
Yeah, I think what you just said, it's not real yet because we're not at the racetrack. But, you know, one thing I will say is that being in Indianapolis, I got to experience that last year, like the month of May leading up to the 500, and kind of the I won't say culture, but the excitement in the city around the event, right? Like May 1st, it kicks off everything. And it seems like everyone's excited leading up to it. I mean, I'm looking out at my street right now, and there's checkered flags across the street. I saw a Stingray Avenue sign on someone's garage door not far from where I'm living right now. And it's just cool to see like the excitement the city has and how that plays into the whole feeling of the month of May. Like, even though we're not on track, it still feels like a race weekend. It still feels like everyone's wanting to be there like tomorrow. And so it's kind of a cool thing to experience as a fan first. And so I got to go to the 500 the last 2 years and then see what that was all like building up. And then living here last year, I got to go to the parade, like walked from my apartment to the parade, and I got to experience all the festivities there. So now I think I'm excited to see what it's like on the other side and to drive in it. And I think the competitor in me is going to say that, it's cool, it's exciting, but I want to win. And so that means that my focus is on the racing side a lot more than it is on the fun stuff around it.
Yeah, one more thing about the fun stuff around it. I suspect that even in Idaho, your home state, there's not a street sign in a downtown street that says Stingray Rob. And you've surely seen those street signs. For those that don't know, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway staff does a good job of placing these signs across downtown. And so you have your own street right now in Indianapolis. That just is strange. It's a great idea, but it's strange.
It's very cool. It's fun to see. Like, I'll get texts from people that are walking downtown, like, Stingray, your street sign's right here. I'm like, it's awesome. It's so cool.
Let's talk about the road course race first. You know, you've run the course. What do you like about it? You know, what do you anticipate the familiarity being like next week?
Yeah, I have good memories of the road course. Back in 2020, that's when we had our triple header race weekend there that I swept. Won all three races there in Indy Pro 2000, which is now under a different name, but it was Indy Pro 2000 at the time. And going there last year in the Indy Next series with Andretti, I started okay in the race, and I remember I fell back early, and then we fought our way through, and then that early yellow flag came out to cancel the race due to weather. And then we sat and watched the IndyCar race go by, and I went out in the rain. So we had the first half of the race in the dry, and the first or second half of the race in the rain, and ended up finishing on the podium after falling back to like 13th or whatever it was. And so I have good memories there. It's a track that I've been on quite a bit. I really like permanent road courses. You know, I say that those are kind of my bread and butter just because it's what I grew up doing in go-karts. So there's some sort of familiarity there as well as just with the time that I've spent on that track. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that the IndyCar around that place is going to be interesting to drive because you have the big long front straightaway down to a big brake zone at turn one. And I haven't had something where you're entering with that much speed yet, at least in the IndyCar. So I'm excited to see what that feels like with the carbon brakes and everything and the extra downforce. But I think that the team's done a good job of kind of listening to feedback over the last few races going into this event to see, okay, we can roll off the truck with a slightly different example of what Stingray needs. Because like I said, I felt like Barber was the first weekend that I had that I actually felt like an IndyCar driver. And part of that was, you know, giving the team feedback that they can utilize. And like we made progress from practice one, the warm up, you know, we were 23rd, 24th, 25th in practice one, and we were 14th in the warm up on Sunday right before the race. And that was an example of what the team was able to do to progress through the weekend. And so I think that going from another Barber, a permanent road course, to Indy road course, it's allowing us to kind of build on that program even more so. And that might even be a weak area for us as a team. And I'm still learning how to drive the car in the meantime. So it's cool to see, like, this is the time of year when the things start to build momentum, start to build on those stacks, the foundation blocks, and you're stacking them higher and higher. So it's kind of a fun thing to think about that, you know, we're going to the Indy road course, but in the back of my mind, I'm still thinking 500. You know, I'm still going to go around that place thinking, oh yeah, here in a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing one of the biggest races in the world. But yeah, I definitely am excited for this next weekend.
So Stingray Rob joins us. You mentioned the 500. How did the test go? What were kind of the eye-opening moments for you as, you know, you attacked the oval for the first time?
Yeah, so we had the rookie orientation test the morning of the event. And that was kind of interesting because the cars are not made to go that slow. You know, we had to do 15 laps of 205 to 210 miles an hour. And then once you check that box, you go from 210 to 215. And then once you check that box, you do 215 plus. And so that 205 to 210 number, we just stacked downforce on the car and try to make it as slow as possible because the IndyCar itself, it's very efficient at those speeds. You know, it's creating a lot of downforce, but at the same time, it's like I'm lifting on straightaways to make sure I'm going slow enough. And then once you get up to like the 215 plus range, then you got to take downforce off the car and pretty flat out. But, you know, I think the test gave me a good eye opening to what a lower bank track is like. You know, my only experience on a super speedway was Texas, and that was super high banks, really a lot of grip, more than I was expecting. And it raced really well. You could actually run, you know, two lanes wide. And Indy is a little bit different in the sense because you can't run two lanes wide. If someone makes a move on you, you got to back out or stay in front, one of the two. You don't have an option to kind of go too wide through any of the corners there. So I got to experience some of that. You know, Renus passed me into turn three off the back straightaway, and I got in the marbles a little bit. And the track was so dirty and dusty. I was expecting it to be at least a little bit more forgiving, but it wasn't. You know, with that tailwind down to turn three, I felt that understeer going to that turn, the extra speed and the dirt on the racetrack. So that was a bit of an exciting experience. But, you know, outside of that, the things that I learned throughout the day, I think that just like the closing rates of the cars at that speed are insane. And there's a lot of nuances that go into driving on a super speedway, managing the gaps, managing the draft. And, you know, I think that we didn't really have we didn't have our 500 car. We were on a road course car that was set up to go on a super speedway. So it's not the fastest car in the world, but you know, we had an extra downforce on the car just to keep me comfortable and dealing with that extra wind and gusty. The back straightaway was really fast. That front straightaway was really slow, and that affects the turns accordingly. And so we just wanted to keep it safe, keep me comfortable, keep me where I could keep my confidence. And I think that going into the month of May with as much seat time as I'm going to have, I'm going to keep getting better and better. We know that the team's got to get oval car. They had it at Texas. They're going to have it here. So I'm excited about it.
So you're going to run an oval car, a different car for the month of May when that starts on the 16th. So that's some guys did the road course car. Some guys did the oval test car. And by the way, you say that you can't go too wide in turn one. There are guys like Tony Kanaan who don't subscribe to that theory. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I've heard of a few names bouncing around the paddock that they like to go too wide more than the others. So I know who I'm racing against.
Have you had some where has been your celebration moments in this? I know these four races haven't gone quite maybe as you'd like. You had the crash at Texas, which obviously not fun. But has there been a couple celebration moments this season already?
Yeah, I think so. St. Pete, the celebration moment was finishing the race, or at least most of the race. After that turn three incident on lap one, I thought our day was done. And so the fact that we were able to keep going and get the car back together, I was like, okay, that's good. We can celebrate that. Finished 16th, I think, at that race. So, and then I think my most recent celebration was probably at Barber, in the warm up before race day. You know, I think that the package that we rolled off the truck with, like I've already said, was not something that was very effective. And so it was cool to see the team was able to take the feedback I was giving and make steps forward because of that. And we were taking big swings at the car, honestly, and they were all going the right direction. And so that was fun to kind of see and celebrate. And in a warm-up, it's not very telling of what the race is going to be like, but at least for the first part of it, we were running in the top 10 on pace, and then we're going faster and faster and didn't really get to make the changes that we wanted to adapt to the conditions like other cars did. But it just seemed like that was kind of the moment where things are starting to click. And I actually beat David, my teammate, in that session. And that was kind of like I said, the first time where I was like, okay, I can be an IndyCar driver, you know, give myself a little pat on the back and keep moving forward. But it's kind of cool to kind of get the sensation of like, I'm not just searching for what the answers are right now. Like I'm kind of giving myself a direction and know where I'm supposed to be at.
Have you had simulator time recently? Have you gotten any this season?
So I have my home simulator that I've been using recently. But other than that, no.
Yeah. I just didn't know how much, you know, extra prep time you've had going into the season. Where are the other places as you look at the rest of the season that you have had success? I know you won the Indy Next race last year or one of the two at Laguna Seca. Where would be the other places in the season that you would expect that things would go well?
Looking at the calendar, probably Mid Ohio is a good option. Road America, a lot of the permanent road courses. Seems like Gateway could be a good opportunity as well. I think that the team's got a good car there, as well as with the extra experience later in the season, things start to click better at that event. Portland could be one. That's not necessarily a track that I've done at or been successful at, other than at the AA ladder of Indy Pro 2000. I struggled there in the Indy Next series for some reason, but it seems like a lot of the permanent road courses are familiar to me. And those are the areas where I can feel my brain clicking a lot more. I can feel the progress being made a lot more at those events. So I don't know. We'll see what the street courses are like. Toronto is definitely a track that I'd like to do well at. I haven't been there in a few years, but when it was there, it seemed like it was a fun track with the different pavement changes and just kind of like the transitions from those different aggregates on that track. Like turn one, for example, you're on like three or four different aggregates just on the way in. Yeah. And then on the exit, it's four more other ones. So that seems like it'll be kind of fun to test the waters on. And Nashville's a track I did at last year, did well at. And I know that seems to be a bit of a crash fest, but if you stay clean, it could be a good event. So yeah, a lot of street courses and probably Gateway.
Sounds like a lot of fun. You're going to find another level of commitment and I guess, you know, your schedule is going to look different here in the next couple weeks as we get rolling with Indianapolis. Cars are on track next Friday and Saturday with a race, the GMR Grand Prix next Saturday on NBC and here on the IndyCar Radio Network. And then we roll into the big show on May 16th. Going to be big, big fun. We're very hopeful that it's a good month for you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, this is definitely an exciting time in my life, but you know, I'm a little jealous of the other guys in the series that know what they're getting themselves into. Every weekend, I'm experiencing something new, it seems like. So that's why I'm excited about next weekend. It's a track that I know. It's a race that I've been to. But the 500, man, I don't even have an idea yet of what that's going to be like. You know, they said it all changes once you're in the race. The team's, I think, understanding of where I'm at, and they're excited to see what I'm going to be like come the 500, but that's going to come with prep time and all that time that we're going to get during the month of May.
Stingray Rob, the number 51 Biohaven Honda, good luck to you.
Appreciate it, Kirk.
All right, this is Trackside. We'll be back in just a minute, Kevin, see what we missed and what we need to clean up. 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, what did we miss? A lot of Formula One tweets, so we'll move on. I saw this from Juncos Hollinger Racing. They tweeted out that Juncos Hollinger Racing and Rhys Gold have mutually agreed to part ways as of May 3rd. That's yesterday. The future of the 76 car is still undetermined as of this moment. We wish Rhys all the best in the future. So this is their Indy Next team, for those of you casually paying attention, formerly Indy Lights. So not the IndyCar team. You know, sometimes junior drivers don't finish the season because they simply run out of budget. There was another driver that didn't come to Barber because of that. I have no sourcing on this, but I feel it's likely this is not a budget issue. I think Rhys Gold is fine on budget from the family. So my guess is he will be in another car very soon, probably next weekend in Indianapolis. And my best guess is he will be in an HMD car because they have an open seat and they are winning races. They are sweeping podiums. And, you know, that's the peril if you're a junior formula team, that if it's not going well for your drivers, if you don't have an ironclad contract and teams always have the ability to create an extra car and so forth, you know, teams, drivers bounce around. This happens. So don't know anything, but I'd say there's a pretty good guess that we'll see Rhys Gold in an HMD car. He's been a front runner in the other lower levels. I think finished second in the USF Pro Championship last year, did well in the championship in USF 2000. He does have history with CAPE. He ran there before and in USF 2000. And his dad actually was the very first CAPE driver in SECCA cars, I think it was. You know, it was kind of an amateur driver many years ago. But my bet is on HMD. A few tweets. Paul at PKDODIMEAD. And by the way, I know Jake, I was going to talk to Jake, who's in the studio for the next show. I'm getting reverb in my ears, so I had to pull out the earplug. So I'm not going to be able to do that with Jake this time, so we'll have to try it another time. This is sometimes the challenges when you go live when you're not in the studio. Paul, I like your question. With May being the most high-profile month in the IndyCar season, which drivers most need to have a good month of May? He says, I'll start Rhys VK. I need more time for this because that's a great question. And I think you can argue about 10 different drivers. There is going to be a lot of movement, potentially. Sometimes it always come out that way, but there are a lot of drivers out of contract. There are a lot of teams and I think also drivers that are looking for greener pastures. So this is a really big month for a lot of drivers. We'll address that tomorrow night. Paul Dalby, field of 33. Can I read Jake's text that he just sent to me? I think Shannon is going to use that for him as well. She often says six times a month, I'm getting reverb, so I can't talk to you right now. Very good on Shannon. Also on the Twitter machine tonight, asked by, where did it go? Where did it go? I saw this. See, I got distracted, Jake. and I hit something. Oh, Paul Dalby says, if you want to get to your app replies to light up, I would suggest Buddy Lazier as a driver who in a couple of years before having his career really take off. This is in response to, has anybody done like what Marcus Ericsson did and take off in year three or so? Yeah, obviously, Buddy, it helped when a lot of the drivers moved on to kart. A safer answer, Paul says, though, would be Jimmy Vassar. Mediocrity to champion in a single year from 95 to 96. That's a good one. We'll continue to discuss that as well. And we're out of time because Jake is in studio. So is Mike Thompson. Beyond the Bricks is coming up. Thanks to Stingray Rob. For Kurt, I'm Kevin. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.